Want to find out who's on the Drew Marshall Show next week? Sign up for our weekly email updates online at drewmarshall.ca.
Well, a number of years ago, the man who cracked the genome found God. As head of the Human Genome Project at the National Institute of Health for 7 years, Dr. Francis Collins had overseen the sequencing of the genetic roadmap for human life, a breakthrough that absolutely promised to save millions. So, pretty phenomenal, really. In his book, The Language of God, Dr. Collins describes his own journey from atheism to committed Christianity, a faith he embraced as a young physician. However, he also discusses his belief as a theistic evolutionist. So we're going to find out what in the world that means. From what I understand, it means they believe that there is a God, that he is in some way the creator of the material universe, and by consequence all life within, and that biological evolution is simply a natural process within that creation. We'll see if I've got that right. Evolution, according to his view, or this view, is simply a tool that God created and employed to help life grow and flourish. And joining us today is the man himself, Dr. Francis Collins. Dr. Collins, how many interviews have you done about this?
Oh, I think I lost count a while back, but I'm glad to do one with you today, Drew.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. My apologies for taking so long to get around to you, because your book's been out for a couple of years now.
It has indeed, and it seems to have attracted a fair amount of interest, judging by the hundreds, in fact now thousands of emails that I've received since it came out.
Well, one of the emails you received was from this gentleman beside me. He's a childhood friend, well, back in the teenage days at a Christian camp. His name is Dave Smiley, and we were chatting about something completely unrelated the other day, and then all of a sudden this topic came up, and he said, you know, you should get him on your show. And so I did. Dave Smiley, Dr. Francis Collins.
Hello.
Fantastic to hear from you. I'm looking forward to this.
Dave is a drummer, so he's not real good with words.
He's a musician as well.
Francis is he can keep the beat, though, right?
Yes, he can. Well, not bad for a white boy. That's what I've understood. So listen, I went into richarddawkins.net. Oddly enough, it's called A Clear Thinking Oasis. And this is something I want to start off the interview with you with, okay? Listen to this. Francis Collins, physical chemist, medical geneticist, and head of the Human Genome Project, or used to be, has written a book entitled The Language of God. In it, he attempts to demonstrate that there is a consistent and profoundly satisfying harmony between 21st century science and evangelical Christianity. Is that an accurate statement so far?
That's right on target.
To say that he fails at his task does not quite get at the inadequacy of his efforts. He fails the way a surgeon would fail if he attempted to operate using only his toes. His failure is predictable, spectacular, and vile. Wow. The Language of God reads like a hoax text, and the knowledge that it is not a hoax should be disturbing to anyone who cares about the future of intellectual and political discourse in the United States. So, since we're from Canada, we'll disregard all that. You had a full-on debate with Mr. Dawkins, did you not?
I did, in front of the editors of Time magazine, and it ended up on the cover of Time as a opportunity to explore some of these issues.
Excellent. I had, from what I understand, you won the debate as far as, I guess, procedure and the way you came across. You know, as usual, Mr. Dawkins came across a tad annoying or arrogant or abrasive, but some of the outsiders are saying, boy, Mr. Dawkins had some slam shut arguments there. I guess I'm assuming that you would disagree with that. I've never heard someone come away from those type of debates and say, boy, he really kicked my butt.
Well, no, he didn't, I think, succeed in that, and obviously he'd already conveyed his arguments about atheism in his book, The God Delusion, and those were familiar and rehearsed by him in the course of that debate. But basically, Dawkins and others in that same camp, which includes people like Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett, try to make a case about the existence of God using scientific arguments. And right from the get-go, they're in trouble there, because that's a category error. Science is the way to understand nature. It's a fantastically effective way to understand how nature works. But if God has any meaning, unless you're a pantheist, God is at least in part outside of nature, and science therefore is required to remain silent on whether God exists or not. You're not going to get the answer that way.
Okay, there are a lot of literal six-day creationists listening, Dr. Collins. And I don't know what to say to them because the only ones, well, not the only, the majority of literal 68 creationists that I've come across have been just as arrogant as Dawkins, but on the other end. And both of those extremes annoy me for a number of reasons. One, I'm Canadian. I avoid conflict like the plague. But two, because I understand both sides have truths. And both sides are very passionate about this. And I must admit to you, Dr. Collins, I am passionless when it comes to the beginning of our world. And so there's, I'm admitting right off the bat a couple things. Number one, I'm ignorant. Number two, I don't really give a holy grunt about whether it was literal 6 days or not. But I think at the basis for that reasoning is the fact that I feel trapped to only be able to choose two points of view. I'm either an evolutionist or I'm a literal 6 day creationist. Help me.
Well, I think you've verbalized it very well in terms of the problem we are now in. And I would agree that the origin of the universe and the age of the earth is not the central question of Christianity, and yet it has become a big distraction. And particularly if one listens to the extreme voices, as you've outlined them, fundamentalists on both ends of the spectrum, you begin to wonder, is there any possible way to find harmony between what science is teaching us about the nature of the universe and ourselves and what the Bible says about God and about humans and our place as being created in God's image? I think we've ended up in an unfortunate and unnecessary polarization that is not created by God but is created by humans. After all, the words in Genesis 1 and 2, if looked at carefully, and they have been over centuries, do not, in the view of most deep-thinking theologians down through the eons, require the kind of literal six-day interpretation that has somehow become sort of the accepted view of the evangelical Christian church. And I say that with great concern and with great love for my brothers and sisters who have been brought into that view with the concern that if they slip away from it, they're in danger of losing their faith altogether.
Right.
But go back and read Augustine in 400 AD, who seems to me was one of the most deep-thinking and deeply committed Christians of the early era after Christ. Augustine warns very explicitly against the idea of attaching that kind of literal interpretation to Genesis, lest at some future time investigations coming from science might force a reinterpretation that made the church appear foolish.
Wow, well, very, very prophetical words from him.
Indeed. And here we are, having now sort of failed to pay attention to that exhortation and paying a price, which is reflected in the trauma that many young Christians experience when, after being raised in a creationist perspective, they actually get to the point of learning the true facts and realize that can't be sustained.
Okay, I just watched for the second time one of my, I would say, most recent favorite movies other than Slumdog Millionaire. It's actually called Religulous. And you were sort of a star in there. I suspect that you just didn't give them the fodder that they really wanted to further their agenda. So good for you for doing that. Way to be sharp. But in this movie, mockumentary, would be a gentleman named Ken Ham from the Creation Museum or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And their premise along the way is, look, if I can't trust God to be truthful in Genesis 1, how can I trust him to be truthful about any other part in the Bible? We've had some callers already, and one person said this basically the same thing. You know, why can't we just read the Bible and say, there it is, it's in the Bible, chew on it, and let's move forward?
Well, if it was that simple, I would embrace that as well. But the Bible is not, in this part of it, all that clear about what the meaning is. As I said a minute ago, thoughtful people, long before we had all the scientific data, did not feel that Genesis 1 and 2 were intended as scientific textbooks or as literal history. And after all, read carefully. There are two creation stories in Genesis 1 and 2, and they don't quite agree with each other in the order of events. So aren't you already in trouble insisting that this has to be read literally because there's a conflict before you get to the end of the second chapter?
Right, and the other thing I would throw in is we wouldn't use those same translation protocols on Revelation. And Revelation is one of the most confusing books in the Bible. And to me, isn't it interesting that the first book and the last book seem to be the ones that have divided us so much?
Right, and there is this long tradition, which has sort of gotten lost somehow in the more recent circles, especially in the conservative Christian church, of something called hermeneutics, which is the important issue of trying to understand Scripture in the context in which it was written, for the time in which it was written, the kind of language that is used, whether it sounds like language that's intended to be historical and the record of eyewitnesses, or whether it is more lyrical, more mythical. And somehow that distinction has been pushed to the background in many recent interpreters. And I understand why that is, Drew. I think many Christians are threatened by the Dawkins view, and of course it started back before Dawkins was born, that science could somehow prove that God was no longer necessary. Again, Christians need not fear that. Science will never be able to disprove God. I can say that categorically, nor will it be able to prove God.
Yeah, well said. Well said. All right, again, on the phone with Dr. Francis Collins. He's the author of The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief. Dr. Collins, I can already hear some of the Jesus people out there saying, well, he's probably one of those liberal, you know, pluralistic, kumbaya, every way is fine to get to heaven kind of Christians, and so that's why he buys into the evolutionist side of things.
Well, it might be convenient for people to imagine that, but it doesn't happen to be the case. I am a serious Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ as my Savior. I believe the resurrection was a literal event. I believe that the faith that I have, which I acquired at age 27, is the rock of my life and not just some sort of convenient way to deal with conversations like this. So, again, and this is a sort of a surprise to a lot of people, but, you know, I think we have a hope of resolving this really unpleasant battle that's going on at the present time. If we could sort of step back from the rhetoric and say, okay, God gave us two books. God gave us the book of God's words, which is the Bible. But God also gave us the book of God's works, which is creation, and which science gives us a chance to understand. And in the process, our awe of the Creator goes up and not down. And how could it be that those books would actually be in conflict with each other when they're both of God? We need not fear that.
Is the hope actually maybe your new organization in this whole theistic evolutionary discussion? Because I would ask people, I say, if you had another option. And again, we had a caller say, well, yeah, I don't have any other option. I have to believe in literal 6 days because the alternative is this evolutionary, this person might say, nonsense. And I can't believe in that. I have to believe in God's word. And so I don't have another option. But here you are, Dr. Francis Collins, saying, whoa, 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 whoa. There is another option, correct?
There certainly is. And the option is actually a very simple one, and it is the one which the vast majority of scientists who are also serious Christians have arrived at, many of them without realizing that others had arrived there too. And it is often referred to as theistic evolution, although I think it's a terrible term and it puts people off. And so I've tried to suggest an alternative, which is the following. What we're talking about here is life by God having spoken it into being, so bios through logos, or simply biologos, as an alternative way of describing this harmony. So those of us who are scientists, who are believers, if you accept the idea that's what written in Genesis 1 and 2 need not be absolute literal 24-hour days, and then you begin to ask, what is the message here? Well, it's about a God who wished to create creatures in God's image who could come to a knowledge of their need for Christ, of their need to be redeemed from the fall. And if evolution was the means by which God chose to carry out that creative outcome, who are we to say, well, I wouldn't have done it that way? It's an incredibly elegant way of not only creating humans, but all this marvelous diversity of life around us.
Are you familiar with biologist P.Z. Myers?
A little bit.
Okay. Apparently he was expelled from the movie Expelled. He was a policeman stopped him and said, we've been instructed by management and the producer of this movie not to allow you into the screening of it, and even though his guest was Richard Dawkins. So his guest went in, but he didn't. I just thought that was an interesting point, which, of course, segues nicely into what did you think about Expelled?
Oh, dear. I thought it was an unfortunate and misleading contribution to what is already an area of confusion.
Well, why? Yeah, and the other thing is, why the heck didn't they ask you?
I assume because they didn't want to know what I would have to say. Expelled seemed to be designed to put forward the hypothesis that there is some intentional and devious discrimination going on against people who are scientists and believers. I have not experienced that, and I think the people that they put forward in that movie as martyrs, well, let's say the stories have been changed a bit from the actual reality.
All right. I came across some quotes on Dawkins' website, and I just want to read these to you and then get your reaction. Again, we're on the phone with Dr. Francis Collins, geneticist and author of The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief. When is your website, by the way, just completely on a separate note here, when is it going to kind of really get going? The website is biologos.org. That's biologos.org.
That will be up in late April. It's already in a reasonable draft form, but we want to be sure that we haven't committed any unanticipated heresies. So
yeah, well, good luck with that. I think
basically, this website is a response to those thousands of queries I've had since the publication of The Language of God. And so working with some other colleagues, we have distilled those down into 33 questions that get asked over and over again by serious thinkers, believers, skeptics, and the rest. And we will propose 4 or 5 page answers to each of those questions. Maybe I should say responses, because some of them don't have just one possible answer.
Right.
As a way of trying to further the dialogue in a respectful, non-emotional, intellectually rigorous way.
Okay. Time is the measure of change. If there is no time, there is no change. If there is no change, there is no action. If there is no action, there is no creation. If God were to exist outside of time, he would be impotent to do anything at all. By insisting that God exists outside of nature, Collins nearly makes his supernatural compartment so small that there isn't enough room for God.
So does that make sense to you? Does it make sense to me? I think the argument that I think many of us arrive at about the nature of God, and again, this goes back to Augustine, who really put forward the notion of the timelessness of God. If we have the issue of God as creator, the comeback that atheists will often say, well, that doesn't solve anything. Who created God? And as long as God is limited in time in the way that we are, then you've got a real problem in that so-called infinite regress. But again, if God is outside of time, and God has to be outside of time in order to explain the Big Bang and God's hand in it, then that issue essentially disappears. And it also can be somewhat of a reassurance to people who wonder, why did it take so long for humans to appear in God's creation? If we were such an important part of the plan, why didn't God just do this snapping of the fingers thing, and here we would be? Well, in God's timing, perhaps that's exactly what it was.
Okay, for the simple folks out there like myself who might be listening to this show, because the intellectuals have plenty of other shows to listen to, can you just explain to me how you think it all started? And I know this could be like, I can imagine your brain already saying, oh my goodness, and you have how much time left? So as concisely and as bumper stickery as possible, you know, okay. In the beginning, you know, where do we go? Some people start with Big Bang. Some people start with I don't know. How did it start with your thinking, Dr. Collins?
In the beginning, God, who is both creator, mathematician, physicist, and the source of everything we call love, had a concept of creating matter and energy in a way which would inexorably lead forward to the existence of a small planet in the outer rim of a spiral galaxy that, in God's plan, had the appropriate characteristics for life to emerge. And God intentionally set all of those parameters of matter and energy in miraculous ways to make it possible for something as complex as life, even human life, to result, using the process of evolution, also part of God's plan, to ultimately, over all that time, end up with creatures with large, complex brains capable of spirituality and of the search for God himself.
How old is the Earth?
4.8 1.55 billion years.
You can't say that. All my homeschooling friends are freaking out right now.
Well, I feel bad for them, and I feel bad for somehow Christianity having gotten in a place where that particular statement of fact, which is incontrovertible from cosmology, from physics, from geology, from paleontology, from chemistry, all of these sources of information all pointing to that same number, unless you're going to say God set this up to intentionally deceive us through science, which doesn't sound like the God that I worship, then one has to say that the Earth is more than 10,000 years old, and in fact a lot more than 10,000 years old.
Did dinosaurs and man exist at the same period of time?
They most certainly did not. Again,
but they were vegetarians.
Sorry?
They were vegetarians.
The dinosaurs were.
Yes, well, that's what I was told by creationist people.
Well, they sure
That's
had
why they didn't eat people when they were living beside them.
They had awfully big teeth to be eating all those vegetables.
Now, listen, I know some vegetarian humans, and they have huge teeth, too. I think it's all the wheatgrass and carrots they're gnawing on. Oh, well. Okay, how do you define evolution? I mean, that sounds like a really goofy sort of, I don't know, a primary school question here. Within everything that we're talking about, I guess we should make sure we're using, you know, we're jumping off the same jumping point here. So what is evolution?
I think it's a very good question, Drew, because in many Christians' minds, evolution equals atheism, and it most certainly does not. Evolution is simply the framework that we now understand about life. It is central to our understanding about life. It says that there was a common ancestor or a small set of common ancestors from which all living things were derived by a process of gradual change over long periods of time, acted upon by natural selection, so the changes that resulted in improved reproductive success were favored and those that didn't were not. That's it.
Did we come from monkeys?
You know, there's a funny aspect of that, because it implies that monkeys that are alive today, like chimpanzees, were our ancestors. No, but we and chimpanzees are derived from a common ancestor that's no longer around, and about 6 million years ago.
Is that woman?
Sorry?
Is that woman? Sorry, just trying to be funny. Obviously it didn't work. Well, I think it's International Women's Day today, so I thought I'd take a shot at that.
You're going to get email about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, again, the evidence, because, you know, what I've done as a medical professional is to study DNA. I had the privilege of leading the Human Genome Project, of reading out all of the DNA letters of our own code, and we also did that now for more than 30 other animals, including the chimpanzee. You get, by doing that, the kind of digital evidence for common ancestry that Darwin never could have imagined. It is overwhelming, and it's incontrovertible. You can't look at that data and not conclude that we humans share ancestry with other animals.
Okay, so how do you actually feel about Darwin?
Darwin was a brilliant guy. He had an insight. Well, so did Alfred Lord Wallace, who came along at about the same time but didn't get quite the same visibility. Of exactly how it is that you can put these observations about living things together. Probably if somebody else had come up with the same idea a couple of years earlier, we would now be talking about that person. I'm a little worried that we've turned evolution, which is a scientific theory, into a bit of a cult of personality, and we even call it Darwinism, as if somehow we're worshiping Darwin, which I think sends the wrong message. Nobody talks about relativity as if that was Einsteinism, but we talk about Darwinism in a shorthand way to describe our understanding of life. And maybe we need to back off a little bit on that and talk about the science and not focus so much on the person. He was just a person.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we had a caller ask this question. What tool or system do you use to come up with the Earth's age?
It's a variety of systems. Probably the one that is most precise is using radioactive dating of rocks.
Is that carbon-14?
No.
Carbon-14. You know, the only reason I know that is from all of the Jesus tapes and films I watched. They all made fun of carbon-14 dating.
Well, carbon-14 is too short in its half-life to be useful in this regard. But there's a whole variety of other series that include uranium and iron that give you the kinds of time scales that you would need to be able to assess something that is this old. And that Number is what you arrive at by looking at Earth as well as at moon rocks, as well as meteorites. Let me say, there's a wonderful book that I would really urge open-minded evangelicals to look at because it's really written, I think, in a very loving and open way from their perspective trying to go through this. And that's a book by Daryl Falk, F-A-L-K, called Coming to Peace with Science, published by InterVarsity. And just a wonderfully thoughtful presentation of things like the age of the Earth and like how living things are related to each other through the process of what he calls gradual creation, trying to use that word instead of evolution in order not to scare people.
Does the flood, worldwide flood, does that play into your equation, this, what do you call yourself again? I can't remember the big words again. What are they called? Theistic evolutionist, that's it.
Yeah, evolution.
Does that play into your scenario at all? Because I know the creationists love to talk about, well, the reason that this is this way and this is that way is you have to take into account a worldwide flood. Do you guys take into account a worldwide flood too?
No. Again, you're quite right, though, that Henry Morris, back in 1960, published the book called The Genesis Flood, which aimed to provide some scientific legitimacy to the idea that the Earth was only 6,000 years old, and yet you had fossils and rocks that went through many strata and so on. That theory, I think, is extremely difficult to support beyond the very first, most superficial glance for all kinds of reasons. It is clear that there was some kind of incredible flood of a local sort that occurred, not only from what we read in the Bible, but from other non-biblical sources. But the notion that that need be worldwide is, again, not required by the scripture, if one looks closely at the words and the context in which they were written. And scientifically, it is very difficult to come up with a scenario. You are obligated to ask the question, where would all that water come from?
Well, Dr. Collins, you have just shattered many people's understanding of a worldwide flood. You have just said there's no such thing as a worldwide flood. It didn't happen.
I think the evidence would say it did not, even though those who were living at that time, whose world was constrained by their ability to explore it, which was pretty modest, seemed very much to them like the whole world was flooded. In terms of the entire planet Earth, it's almost impossible to defend that perspective.
What about the firmament?
The firmament. You mean the water in the firmament?
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, yeah.
That idea that...
I actually don't know what I'm talking about, but I thought I'd clear that up.
Well, the idea that there was somehow this canopy over the whole Earth that was enough water there to be able to then be brought to bear on a complete worldwide flood, that's, again, a proposal put forward in the Genesis flood. I don't know any serious hydrologist who's looked at that evidence and finds that it holds up at all.
No pun intended.
Sorry.
Well, you know, and again, I need you. What I'm doing is I'm taking out stuff from the deep recesses of my cavernous cranium that I learned from back in the, you know, early days of Keith Greenisms. And, you know, all the great little Jesus films that were out there and whatever else. And I'm dusting them off one more time because I just kind of put them away because I just got to the point where I said to myself, Drew, you have a hard enough time loving people that are hard to love, let alone caring about, you know, whether the world was created in six literal days. So here's a teaching that I remember. The reason Methuselah ended up being 900 and something years old was because the firmament hadn't broke yet, and because there was this protective layer of water protecting us from the harmful radiation of the sun's rays, the people could live older. As soon as the flood came, you'll notice people's ages decreased in the Bible slowly and surely until we got down to 100 or whatever, you know. Then you take the fact that reptiles never stop growing. And you take a 900-year-old reptile, it's going to be big. There's your dinosaur. Am I making any sense here at all?
That last part I had a little trouble with. I mean, turtles do live to be hundreds of years old, but they don't keep growing. They have their sort of maximum size that they reach, and then they maintain that size for a very long period of time until something does them in. So, I hear what you're reflecting in terms of proposals that have been made. And, again, I'm concerned, Drew, that as we're having this conversation, some people are listening and are finding this very hard to hear. It would be really useful for those who are having trouble with this issue to actually look at the history of how we ended up in this mess. And it's surprising to many people to learn that if you go back more than 150 years ago, most serious Christians were not literalists when it came to Genesis. That is a relatively recent arrival on the scene. It has been whipped up, I think, by Darwin arriving on the scene and by people feeling threatened and therefore backing away into this corner as a means of trying to resist what they saw as an atheist agenda. But the God of all truth is not served by trying to stand up for something that's not true. And that's unfortunately what the church has been forced to do, both in terms of attacking evolution and by supporting intelligent design, which is another version of this same kind of attempt to resist evolution, but it's not founded on something that's going to have sustainability. You need truth here.
All right. Just before we say goodbye to you, Dr. Collins, and again, thank you so much for your time. I would like our guest here, Dave Smiley, my good old friend from a long time ago. He's the reason you're on the show today. So I want him to ask this question that's been bothering him for. No, it hasn't been bothering him. He just thinks this is a good question. Dave, can you ask your really good question, please?
Yeah. No, Dr. Collins, that you've said what you just said in summary. I'm not sure this is really necessary, but I guess your website will also address a number of these things. But I think you mentioned near the end of your book recent discoveries you mention or that you're aware of. Are they really outdated? Are they coming up with new arguments as well in relation to the recent discoveries you were referring to?
I don't think they're able to come up with compelling arguments that are based upon science, nor do I think that Ken Ham and others in this Answers in Genesis kind of organization are really paying much attention to the science perspective. They come at this from the view that their interpretation of Genesis is absolutely the only truth that they're interested in hearing about. And they're unwilling to consider the possibility that their interpretation might not be the only one.
Right.
And their perspective is, if science disagrees with them, well, then by definition, science is wrong.
Yeah, and I found that just after a church presentation, when I suggested that from an astronomer that I read recently, his name escapes me right now, but when I asked him about that theory, I was just blown away across the table from the answer that I got, which wasn't really an answer. It was, what are you reading him for kind of thing. And just on a Christian level, I know that's not how we should be acting. So that was kind of what started me on this this recent search.
It does drive me nuts that the Christians are known more for putting their heads in the sand on issue, which just provides a nice place to park your bike, than actually dealing with this kind of stuff.
And I think you're right, Drew. And I think if Christianity is going to have credibility, particularly with young people, as we move into this very scientific, technological era, then Christianity has to face the fact that some of the positions that are being espoused from the pulpit and in the Sunday school are those that can't be put together with the evidence that God has given us the grace to discover. We don't have to worry that that's somehow going to bring the whole thing down. It's all God's truth. But let's look at the truth, and let's get together and figure out how we could use this as a means of celebrating God's creation.
Good for you.
Instead of getting all defensive.
Good for you. I am so glad I had you on the show today. Do you ever come to Toronto, Dr. Collins?
I do once in a while.
Will you please look me up, and we'll have you in the studio, and we'll take some calls. Would you be all right with that?
I'd enjoy that thoroughly.
I'll take you up for, a coffee and a donut or something.
You're a high-budget guy.
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Good steward. Dr. Francis Collins, again, geneticist and author of The Language of God, A Scientist Presents Evidence for Belief. The website you want to go to, even though it's not quite up and running yet, but you want to get on their mailing list for sure, is biologos.org. That's biologos.org. And as soon as it's ready to fire, you'll get an email saying it's up and running. Correct?
That's correct.
Dr. Collins, thank you.
Hey, thank you. This was a really interesting conversation.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I enjoyed that. I got a headache, but I enjoyed it.
It was awesome.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, when we come back from our short break, it's the Council of Many. This week on the Council of Many, a man who has been unemployed for over 2 years feels totally abandoned by God as his prayers continue to go unanswered. What advice do you give to somebody who is feeling abandoned by God, who really feels that God is not answering their prayers in any fashion whatsoever? What advice do you give that sort of hopelessness that seems to permeate all of our lives at some season or another? 905-338-1250, 877-JOY-1250. We'll be right back with the Council of Many.
Drew said too much already. Now it's your turn. Call now, 905-338-1250.